you even do a cartwheel?
Oh, can I do a cartwheel?
Oh, no.
Can you do it on the bed?
Don't hurt yourself.
You're going to have to do it on the bed for safety.
No, no injuries, please.
Oh, God!
So, no. So then no is the answer. Welcome to Highly Questionable, where Pablo Torre is the host, but he can't do a cartwheel. That's Mina Kimes. I'm Katie Nolan. Okay.
Have NBA fans already gone too far with their bad behavior?
So you ever go to a party and like a lot of fun stuff is happening and people are really into it, but then there are those two guys who ruin everything and everybody gets like sent home and some people go to jail? Well, that's what happened yesterday, because Russell Westbrook in Philadelphia, in the middle of a blowout I would love to tell you about, had popcorn dumped on him as he was limping away with a rolled ankle into the tunnel. That fan above has since been banned indefinitely for life, it sounds like, by the Wells Fargo Center. So justice has been swift and called for by Russell Westbrook. Anybody with a thinking brain, honestly. And then in New York City, where there was so much good stuff happening that I will tell you guys about with Knicks fans, there was that one fan who now officially has been banned for life himself because he spat in the direction of Trae Young. And look, it's really not that hard to not throw food and or spit at the athletes. You get so much freedom to do so many things that you can't do in real life. Just don't do that stuff. These guys could not help themselves and they ruined it for everybody else.
I don't know why I had a lot of faith in fans when they started to be let back into arenas. Part of me thought that after being told we couldn't go to games, which is a thing I don't think anybody saw coming, like, oh, fans will no longer be able to attend games. I remember a few years ago that being a thing at a baseball game and it being this crazy news story. So part of me thought that when fans could come back, they would come back grateful for the ability to be there. And what I forgot about were those kids in college that were never allowed to drink. And then when they got to college, they went way too hard in the paint. And like, that's what we have right now. We have fans who are getting way too ahead of themselves and into the moment, that they're acting in ways that are against basic human decency. There is not a world in which an average fan is going to spit in the direction of or dump popcorn on a professional athlete face to face, because there are consequences for those actions that I believe fans are immediately familiar with. Whereas in these situations where there's distance, because, you know, with the popcorn situation, the guy who did it, and I think it's a guy, but I'm saying guy gender neutrally, ran away. And what, that's the only reason they weren't kicked out, because they ran away. They knew it was coming. They knew that's not right. It's like, everybody can relate to that feeling when you take it too far and you immediately are like, oh, but don't stop doing that to athletes, because we have this attitude towards athletes that they think they're better than us. Not everybody has this, but there it is a narrative among fans that athletes think they're better than us. First of all, they are at sports. That's just kind of flat out the truth. But it seems to be matched with this counter attitude of like, I need to remind them who they, you don't. Enjoy the game. Heckle, as Pablo said, you are well within your rights to participate loudly and to make a difference. But when you do this, when you take it too far, it ruins the fun for everyone.
Katie, you said something that kind of caught my attention. Normal human decency, which I think is notable, because like, this is not only unacceptable literal trash behavior in this instance, it would be unacceptable in any instance in society. Like if you walked into anyone's workplace and spat at them or throw food at them, you should be potentially arrested. This is totally crazy to me that it still happens in 2021. But of course, it is something that's been happening forever. I mean, the Malice at the Palace was started by a fan throwing a drink at Ron Artest, which people tend to forget. And you're also correct in pointing out that it does seem to happen a lot with Russell Westbrook. And it goes beyond throwing things. Remember in 2019, a Utah Jazz fan was banned for allegedly saying a racist comment at Westbrook. That is abhorrent. It suggests that the NBA needs to be hyper-vigilant when it comes to protecting not just the stars, but all of its athletes. And I think that goes beyond banning this fan in particular from this arena. He should be banned from every arena, because the sport does not need fans like this in any place.
But I will say, the Venn diagram of fans who think that athletes think they're better than us because they make so much money and fans who think that they're entitled to throw popcorn on athletes is a circle.
Well, what's interesting, too, is that Russell Westbrook, after the game, kind of laid it out. He was like, look, you can chant, you suck. You can tell me that I can't shoot. You can do all of that stuff, but what you can't do is say stuff that is either truly derogatory along racial lines or family lines, which I think is a fair line to draw, or it's the stuff that you guys just explained. And to me, Mina, there is a distinction between sports and other jobs that I don't want to lose sight of here, because I don't want sports to be like other offices. I like the idea that you can boo people. I like the idea that part of the bargain of being a very well-paid celebrity who is in the arena like a gladiator, as so many athletes from LeBron and Tom Brady compare themselves to, it's because you have the people in the stands who make life hard. The issue is when you go so far that that fun of heckling, of even cursing out Trae Young, for instance, when that is undone because you can't control yourself because you treat another human like they're subhuman, then you ruin it for everybody, and everybody has to put on a serious face to talk about what should be a fun topic.
I recognize the veracity of what you said, but I also would like to reserve the right to boo you at your place of work.
Boo, Pablo. I do it in my head every
boo.
Time.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say we're reserving that right as opposed to exercising it in literally every show.
Pablo
snoring.
Did the Knicks make a statement last night?
They did. And the statement is, this city that they inhabit is high on a drug called the New York Knicks. And I know this drug. I used to be addicted to it. It's fine. Not going to get back on it anytime soon. But I feel the itch. I feel the itch because I know the symptoms. The symptoms include some dry mouth. The symptoms include not caring at all about the Brooklyn Nets. And the symptoms also include celebrating the first playoff win in 8 years. Like, it is the fall of a grand, vast Death Star collapsing to the surface of the planet, finally getting to celebrate the rise of a rebel alliance in Madison Square Garden. Is this all a bunch of mixed metaphors that don't totally make sense? Also, yes. But the point is, the New York Knicks are back to the extent that they are the best television show in sports right now. I've been watching basketball on and off for 15 months straight now while trapped in New York City, and it's the best show we have because you have no idea on any given night whether Julius Randle will play like he's lobotomized or whether they'll get a game like last night where he will wake back up in the second half while Trae Young mysteriously disappears while the entire Garden is raining down curse words and other things that we'll discuss later in the show, possibly allegedly. But the point is, this TV show with these people, you take the people out of it, not that fun. Put this combination of psychologies together, and yes, the statement is, we all need to watch and enjoy these New York Knicks.
Pablo, are you sure you don't have dry mouth now? Because that was like 2 minutes, that monologue you just did about the Knicks.
Didn't even say what the score was. Don't even know.
Yeah.
They won by 9.
In case you didn't know. I wouldn't call it a statement victory, but it was gutty. They made some smart second half adjustments. Shout out Tibbs. Julius Randle played better in the second half as well. But to me, it was less about the Knicks and more about the Hawks screwing themselves. Because for some reason, Nate McMillan, their coach, only played Trae Young, their star, for 35 minutes. By comparison, Derrick Rose, who is 10 years older than Trae Young, played 38 minutes in game one and is playing on two knees held together by scotch tape, played 39 minutes and played really well in this game. There's no excuse for sitting Trae that long, especially when you're also sitting Bogdanovich, because when the two of them are not on the court or weren't on the court last night, the Hawks were minus 14. So I imagine that's going to be an adjustment they have to make in game three.
Yeah, I agree with Mina. I feel like the statement that was made, and I don't even feel bad saying this in front of you, Pablo, because it's very weird, this world in which you are a New Yorker and a Knicks fan, but you're a Sixers fan, and you called rooting for the Knicks joining a bandwagon, which is the it would actually be returning, but it none of that matters. I agree with Mina. I think it's more about what the Hawks didn't do. Nate McMillan talked so much about fatigue. And this is a team that's on 2 days rest. And it's just the amount of time the word fatigue was used to describe the game plan was just alarming to me. As a person who pays attention to words pretty well, it seems like a guy who's either afraid that his team is gassed or is for some reason playing in a conservative way that assumes his team is going to be gassed. It makes me feel like their conditioning is not on the level that it should be. When I feel like maybe it might not actually be the truth, it feels like he's playing it safe in a way that is so dangerous that it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But another thing that doesn't make a lot of sense to me is Knicks fans chanting after the game, "We want the Nets," a matchup that's not going to happen, if it happens at all, until the Eastern Conference Finals. So
another contradiction in my brain is that, of course, the Sixers will beat the Knicks if the Knicks beat the Hawks. But that, Katie, that chant in specific made total sense. I mean, do we have the scene outside the garden last night? Because we can...
this.
What were they saying?
That is the entirety of the Long Island Railroad waiting for a train and celebrating the fact that they have something to do until they get on it.
They're getting off at Manila.
Ronkonkobo.
Up next on HQ.
I don't think there's a simple answer for that, especially at a time when some athletes, as you said, Pablo, need the press less than ever, and some still want it. All I know is that when someone like Naomi Osaka puts out a statement as well considered as this, it's important to listen and take her thoughts at face value.
What do you make of Naomi Osaka's decision not to participate in post-match press conferences at the French Open?
So the biggest young star in tennis has declared that she's not going to do press conferences. And this has started a whole debate that is both about Naomi Osaka and about a lot more than her. And so let me take the specifics to her. She cited mental health as one of her main concerns. And on that level, we need to do better about understanding that this is a real thing. It is a medical concern. It is something that we have been blind to for very long. And we should all be more empathetic and open towards the idea that maybe Naomi and other people, other athletes, are going through something that should be taken seriously. The bigger picture thing, though, is about what press conferences even are. Who do they help? Are they even worth preserving in any way? Because the reason she said she doesn't want to do them also is because there are reporters who have either seemed to put her in a bad place mentally, but also like not have been a fan of hers. They've been challenging after losses. It's really hard to deal with it. And on that level, this is where I kind of want to defend the press, even though one of the big mistakes everybody makes when talking about the press is treating them as one single thing. It's not. It's never that. But the point of why there should be a press is not to be a fan or a booster of an athlete. It's to hold them to account, to ask questions, to at times be adversarial. Nothing is wrong with that. I think the problem is when that principle is not taken seriously by anybody, and it becomes, of course, part of this attention economy and the internet that ends up being corrosive to everybody involved. So there is a business concern here that is bigger picture. The last ingredient is that Naomi Osaka kind of doesn't need us, kind of doesn't need press conferences, kind of doesn't need the money from the media. And on that level, kind of hard to disagree with her self-interest.
Yeah, that is an important point because there are many layers to this. The first layer, Pablo, as you said, is Naomi Osaka's statement. If, you know, as she said, doing these pressers is affecting her mental health so much so that she's willing to pay fines to avoid them, I respect that. Full stop. That is her prerogative. Where it gets tricky is the ensuing debate, which is not about Naomi Osaka in the specific, but this general question of should athletes be compelled to do pressers at all or fined if they don't? And that's complicated because it's not just about the relationship between athletes and the media and whether the media is being respectful enough in those environments, but it's about the relationship between athletes and their leagues, their sports, their teams, their tournaments, because those are the entities that have decided independent coverage, not public relations, there's a very big difference, is important to grow their sport, to maintain attention. And I don't think there's a simple answer for that, especially at a time when some athletes, as you said, Pablo, need the press less than ever, and some still want it. All I know is that when someone like Naomi Osaka puts out a statement as well considered as this, it's important to listen and take her thoughts at face value.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys have said. I think that mental health with athletes, look, it's something I've talked about a lot. It's something that I think we're starting to talk about a lot, but it's also something that a lot of people feel like they don't need to understand because it's not their beat. And I would urge anybody who works in sports or any sort of relations with any other people, familiarize yourself with mental health and the struggles that some people are going through, and be sure not to do harm to people when doing your job. That is supposed to be one of the rules of journalism, is it not? One thing that stood out to me in Naomi Osaka's statement was that there was something about doubters. And I just want to emphasize, and I'm not saying Naomi doesn't understand this, it's a statement. You can only get so much meaning across in one statement. People doubting you or being adversarial to you is not, protecting yourself from that completely is not mentally healthy. So just want to make sure that's understood in the grand scheme of things. That being said, this is obviously a conversation we've had a million times about the relationship between the press and athletes. Who needs who? What is the purpose of those press conferences? Are we getting any actual information out of them? Are they good for athletes? Should they be required? And it's something that is not going to change in the public space where we're going to decide that athletes don't need to have press conferences. There's a lot of responsibility with all the parties involved in post-game press conferences that I think need to examine their own behavior before we get to a place where these things start to function in a way that's like safer and healthier for all the people involved in them, including the people who consume them.
Yeah, I think your point about Naomi Osaka in the particular is important, because in the same way we don't want to, you know, portray the media as a monolith, athletes are also not a monolith. Some athletes enjoy doing press. Some benefit from it more than others. And she clearly has a very specific problem with it and the way it affects her as an individual. That reminds me a little bit of Marshawn Lynch. You know, when he refused to talk to the press several years ago, there was this freak out about a slippery slope and, oh my God, every football player is going to stop. No, every football player was not going to stop. Marshawn Lynch was unique in that he really didn't enjoy it. He was a soft-spoken, private guy, and that's fine. Like, some athletes don't like to do it, and I think we can take these cases in the particular.
Not to get too highfalutin here, but I will for a second. I get terrified in a real way when people just keep categorizing the press, the media, journalists as completely unethical people who are only there to troll. Because sure, a bunch of those people are that way. But the point of like defending the concept is that if we don't have that concept there, I guarantee that the version of sports or entertainment or politics that we get, it will be worse, even worse than the one you currently dislike.
Do you question if Ja Morant should be less confident?
So the Jazz steamrolled the Grizzlies 141-129 last night, but not because Ja Morant didn't try enough. The guy had 47 in a playoff game, and he attempted this. That's Rudy Gobert playing defense. You may know him as Defensive Player of the Year.
I thought you were going to say the Stifle Tower, which, by the way, is maybe the best nickname in basketball.
It's really great.
Yes, Rudy Gobert absolutely denied Ja Morant. I just want that to be a sport. Can we just have like Rudy Gobert versus guys try to dunk on him as much as humanly possible, please?
So I looked this up on the internet, and the stated weight differential between Rudy Gobert and Ja Morant is 84 pounds.
Wow.
I don't believe that. I think it's more. I don't think Ja Morant, it's like 179 or something. No, I don't believe that at all. Look at that. It's a difference in
two
size.
Heads.
The answer to the question, if we're honoring it, is no, he should not be less confident. He didn't fall over, landed on his feet, turned around, played the other side of the ball. I think go for it. Always go for it. If you're not going to go for it, why are you here?
The dismount really does matter in terms of how you play this off. And he landed with both feet and then
incredible.
Got to run the other direction.
I wish if he fell flat on his back, would we all have different answers?
Yeah, I would have a different opinion completely. Yeah, but that was the second most impressive landing on your feet I've seen this week after Simone Biles.
Do you question if this family did the right thing?
What?
All I know is that we're going to Brazil. Okay.
What?
So there's a rodent in a
guinea pig, I think is what we're saying.
Okay, producer is saying guinea pig.
So they're the mom's trying to save it.
Okay.
Oh, she has it. She has her guinea pig wrangling gloves.
What are we gonna do with it?
Is that the sound of the children or
good
other
question.
Guinea pigs? Oh, they're pumped.
Oh, what's
it's
gonna
not
happen?
Cute.
Something bad's gonna happen.
And they have a new pet.
Something
giant
bad's
rat.
Gonna happen.
Is he going to jump into another hole?
We got to watch
that.
Humans think because we're at the top of the food chain that every time we want to quote unquote help, it's helpful. But what we don't realize is this.
Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, Game 3, Suns and Lakers.
So it's a series. It is 1-1 right now, and let's watch the most, I would say, compelling clip from Game 2. Anthony Davis.
Oh,
ooh. I mean,
poor Jay Crowder.
Like, sometimes you wonder, maybe that guy's faking it to, you know, like, draw a foul or even a suspension, but that was just a guy getting straight up hit right where, you know, everything happens. So I'm impressed, honestly, everything, arguably. I would say Anthony Davis, on the one hand, very impressed you hit a plausible jumper while also, in one motion with your other leg, hit a dude right in the groin. So on that level, I guess I am very intrigued. Katie?
Yeah, I'm super intrigued. That's kind of my whole professional outlook. My goal is to do that professionally, metaphorically, every time I come onto television. Also, I'm once again asking to a man to describe that pain to me.
Oh, describe is this it. Where I is this yeah, where yeah, I well, describe
it's
it?
Like, roll down.
It's like when you're something is so hot that it's also cold. It's like that, but very much in your groin. So
yes, sure.
Okay. You are welcome. Mina,
thanks.
Are you intrigued?
So if I hear you correctly, getting kicked in the nuts is like eating gazpacho? I'm just trying to understand.
Frostbite? It's so cold that it's hot?
It's like getting hit right in the gazpachos, absolutely. That was highly questionable. We learned a lot about each other, some of which I wish we had never learned. That is Katie Nolan. That's Mina Kimes. They have podcasts. Their names are in them, so they're very easy to find. I'm Pablo Torre. I host ESPN Daily.
Clearly doesn't know the name of our podcasts.
It all blurs together, honestly.